Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. I am Johnny. Welcome to the show. If this is your first time listening, I'm glad you're here. You may find that this isn't your typical business interview podcast, and I want you to know it's exactly how I want it. If you have been here before, welcome back. I appreciate you being here, and I hope to be better today than I was the last time. We got a great show for you today, so let's get into it. Today's guest is an internationally recognized SEO expert who's worked with companies like Disney, Apple, and IBM. His name is Brian Dean, and he's the founder of Backlinko, an SEO blog launched in late 2012. Brian has grown Backlinko from zero to over 180,000 visitors a month. In short, this guy knows how to get things ranked on Google. So here's the backstory. Back in July, after studying Brian and his articles for months, I decided to implement and test what he teaches. So during the past 3 months on the blog, I've published just three articles, and traffic has gone up a staggering 181% as of this recording. Yeah, crazy, I know. And anyways, I want you to have access to this process. So in this episode, we're going to hear Brian walk through his exact process for publishing content and getting it to rank number one in Google. Seriously, this is Brian's process for getting topic ideas straight through to publishing and then beyond. And to ensure that you get the very most out of this episode, I want you to not worry about taking notes, but just to take it all in. Just really take in the process and listen to the insights that Brian gives. Then, when you're done, head to hacktheentrepreneur.com/Google. And there you can download this entire process in PDF with complete images, explanations, and links to further reading for you. So listen intently, and then go to hacktheentrepreneur.com/Google. All right, we got a lot to cover here today, so let's get into the interview with Brian. When it comes to marketing your business, it all comes down to finding the right audience and connecting with the right message. If you're working within the business-to-business space, then there's no better place to find your target audience than on LinkedIn. Because every day, over 500 million professionals engage with content on LinkedIn. And chances are, your future customers are among them. LinkedIn's proven marketing tools can help you target your customers with precision, right down to their job title, company name, and industry. And the best part is, there's no better time than right now to try LinkedIn marketing for you and your business. To redeem a free $100 LinkedIn ad credit, go to linkedin.com/hack for your free $100 ad credit to get started today. Some terms and conditions may apply, but go right now to linkedin.com/hack to get started. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, 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 very special guest. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. It's great to be here.
Oh man, I'm so excited for this, and I think everyone's going to get a ton out of this. So let's jump into it, shall we?
Sure.
So we've already heard the introduction about you. We know what you're about, Brian. And I'm going to say, like, between your YouTube channel and your blog, you have this like super consistent output of content. But you're also one of those quantity over quality kind of guys. And I think you only, correct me if I'm wrong, something like 40 blog posts on your site, and you get over 100,000 visits a month. Are those numbers accurate?
Yep.
Nice, nice. So that to me goes contrary to what a lot of people do or say or purport. And I find this fascinating because everybody just is talking that more and more and more. So you only publish stellar content, and which makes me think that you put a fair amount of time into choosing what your next article is going to be. So today I want to take a peek behind the curtains of Backlinko to learn that exact process that you go through to write a new article, one that you want to rank on the first page of Google. So let's just disclaim quickly. To be clear, you can't do this if you have a brand new site. No backlinks, no authority. If you don't even know what that means, don't worry. In the show notes, I'm going to link to a bunch of Brian's articles that are going to explain all that to you. But while listening to this, do keep in mind that the fundamentals are the same, but you will need to rank for much less popular search terms than Brian does, and then build from there. It's where Brian started, it's where I started, and it's where we all have to start. So with that said, Brian's step-by-step technique for writing and ranking a new article. So I guess before researching, writing, publishing your next article, I guess I just want to know, this might be out of the realm of it, but do you, Brian, do you have an overarching content strategy or plan that the next article has to fit within?
Yes, I do. So if there was a step zero, so to speak, I think that's what you're getting at. Yes. Like before you get into the nitty gritty of keywords and content and all that stuff, the step zero would be writing about stuff that you know and that you're good at and that you can teach someone. So the biggest mistake that a lot of people make, and I made this in the early days of other blogs that I launched before Backlinko, was to write about stuff that I didn't really know about. Basically, I regurgitated other stuff that I read online. So I'd literally have like a WordPress post open in one tab and Google open in the other. And I would just kind of like, not copy and paste, obviously, but regurgitate. I'd like take the information, put it in my brain, mix it all around, and then vomit it on the post. And of course, it was complete crap. It never ranked for anything. And it never did well because I didn't actually know that stuff. You know, I was writing about a lot of working at home stuff that I never tried. That was another blog that I had, and a lot of like how to quit your job. But I had already quit my job. I was a freelance writer, so I didn't really have anything to contribute there. But I always was really interested in SEO. I studied it. I liked doing it. It was an interest of mine. I'd read about it all the time. So then when I launched an SEO blog, I could actually write about stuff that I knew, stuff that I was doing, which is an important caveat too. Writing about things that you actually have done in your life helps separate your content from the rest. And that's how I roll. So for example, on the Backlinko blog, there isn't a lot of stuff about really technical things like HTML or coding or technical SEO or site architecture. Like I know a little bit about that stuff from working I ran an agency for a while, but I'm by no means like a technical expert. So I just don't even write about that stuff. The keyword might be perfect. The topic might be perfect for a lot of reasons, but I don't know anything about it. So I'm not going to write about it. So that step zero is basically just sticking as best you can to what you know, and more importantly, what you've already done.
Nice. I love it. I love it. And that's what I was hoping for, is that step zero. And I guess, I mean, if someone's listening and they are at that stage where they're writing about something they don't know with the other page open and WordPress open, I mean, it is a place where most people start. It's just not necessarily somewhere where you're going to find success. So it takes us to step one, I guess, Brian?
Yes. I think that's, I don't know what comes after step zero, but that's not really a step. That's, we just made that up.
Right. Yeah, we might have. So step one, I've got it as researching topics, but where is it that you start? What is step one for you?
So while we're making up steps, we have to make up another one for this step, actually. So okay. We're going to have like step 1A and step 1B.
Nice.
And they're basically two different step ones that you can choose one or the other or both, depending on the circumstance. So whenever I write a topic, whenever I write a blog post, the topic comes from either step 1A or step 1B. Step 1A is the topic. So you start with the topic, which is, could be, if you run a blog about the paleo diet, could be paleo desserts, paleo breakfast, paleo snacks, paleo workouts, paleo weight loss, right? Those are all different topics. And they might speak to you because you have a great idea for a post about that. Like you're awesome at paleo breakfast, or you have a paleo breakfast that you want to write about. And for some reason, that topic speaks to you. You look at some of the stuff that's out there and you're like, man, I could write something way better. And you start with the topic first. That's 1A. 1B is where you start with the keyword. So the keyword is what someone actually types into Google. And sometimes you'll see a keyword that looks really good. And then from that, you can figure out a topic that's going to do well for that keyword. So you say, okay, people are searching for paleo diet breakfasts. And you see that keyword and it hits you. Man, I have a great piece of content that would do really well for that keyword. And that's how you come up with the idea for what you're actually going to write.
Nice. So topic is not the completely broad paleo.
No, because your blog in theory or your site should have a topic already. Like that's step double zero, right?
Right,
like,
right.
Your site has a topic. And then this is like, yeah, this is pretty much like to the subtopic level of an article or a blog post would be written about it. So yeah, it's not paleo. It's like a subtopic or a sub-subtopic of that.
Okay. So this leaves us with either step 1A or step 1B. So either you have the topic, paleo desserts, or you're actually doing keyword research and looking for what someone's typing in.
Exactly.
So how is it, or what do you look at to decide? I'm assuming you come up with multiples of each of these when you're going to write this article that you're going to write, Brian. What is it you go through to decide that this is the one you should actually go for?
So ultimately, it comes down to more art than science. Like deciding on what to write about, there's no magic formula where you put in all the variables and you get like a yes or no. There are keyword research tools that take into account different factors like how many people search for that keyword, how competitive that keyword is, how many people search for it, how many ads are on the front page, so how many people are going to click on your regular organic result, and they give you like a number, and that's helpful. But at the same time, it doesn't take into account what you can actually do with that topic, like how much you can crush it with that topic. So if there's paleo dinners and you're like, you just eat the same thing for dinner every night, that's probably not the best topic for you, even if the keyword might be great. But paleo breakfast, that's where you shine. Even though the numbers might not be perfect, you probably want to go with that topic because at the end of the day, what ultimately matters is how amazing your content is. Yes, optimization matters, keyword research matters, of course. But when in doubt, just go with the thing that you can just hit out of the park.
Okay, so we've picked a keyword, or there's talk about, I think LSI it's called, and then there's long tail keywords we've all probably glanced over at some point. So are we picking one keyword, or are you picking sort of a whole sort of a bunch of them around the same topic?
I'm old school. I go one keyword. So if you have the topic in mind, if you started with 1A, then it's just a matter of turning that topic and finding the keyword that matches it, right? So if you phrase something one way in your mind, it may not be how people search for it in Google. So that's where keyword research comes into play. You just put that topic into a different keyword research tools we can talk about later. And then you get a list of keywords and you find one that matches that topic best. If you start with the keywords, that step's pretty much already done. So in either approach, at the end, you have a keyword, right? It's just two different ways of finding it. Either you start with the keyword or you start with the topic, but at the end, you have a keyword in hand. I like to start with one keyword. And the reason for that is this. Most long tail keywords are just variations of one keyword. So a keyword like paleo diet breakfasts or paleo breakfasts, they're technically two different keywords, but the user wants the same thing. Someone searching for that is looking for breakfast, right? Or easy paleo breakfast or simple paleo breakfast. Like those two keywords are more or less the same thing. And Google's sophisticated enough that they don't really care if you phrase it exactly like the keyword is phrased. So I like to pick one keyword, write an awesome article about it. And then what happens is, because Google's smart, they'll automatically rank you for a bunch of different keywords. So to give an example, I have a post on my site called Google's 200 Ranking Factors, a complete list. And according to an SEO software program called SEMrush, that post ranks for 6,500 different keywords. So 6,500 different keywords, even though I'm only targeting one, Google Ranking Factors. But Google is smart. And when people search for all different stuff, it's a great piece of content so that it bubbles up and they put it to the top of the results. So you don't really need to worry too much about like finding 10 different related keywords or long tails and all that stuff. Just find one keyword that's a good fit. And if you want to look and people search for it and the competition, that's another step, but you only need one.
Okay. So we mentioned that there's another step and another step in there. I think we're still on step 1A or 1B.
Pretty much. Well, the thing is keyword research, like don't get discouraged if you're listening to this and being like, oh my God, I'm overwhelmed. Keyword research could be an entire podcast. Like there's an art and science to it. But at the same time, I'd say most people spend too much time on it than not enough, in the sense that they overthink things. Like, if you have a topic that you could write something amazing about, and you have a keyword that you know people search for on Google, and you eyeball the first page of the results, and you don't see like Wikipedia and all these huge authority sites, just write the thing. You don't have to worry about like, oh, this has a keyword difficulty of 87, this has one of 43. Like, that's basically, if you're just getting started, all you need to know.
All right, so paleo desserts. It's your topic you've chosen. Now, is it time to write the article?
No.
Okay.
No, that's put in the cart way before the
okay,
horse.
Okay, cool. So we'll ignore keyword research. I'll link again to, you have a keyword research article that is stellar and will explain it all for people. So consider that done. You have your keyword. What do you do next, Brian?
So the next is to choose a format. So what format is the thing going to look like? It's kind of like beginning with the end in mind. So it's not so much visualization. It's not woo-woo like that. It's more like, is it going to be a list post, right? 17 paleo dessert recipes. Is it going to be a guide, the ultimate guide to paleo desserts? Is it going to be a how-to post, how to create this specific paleo dessert? Is it going to be a case study, how I changed from brownies to paleo desserts and I lost 83 pounds? Think of the format that it's going to be in and what format would do best for someone searching for that keyword. Because Google can now tell basically if users are satisfied with the result. So if your result is on cracks the first page and people like it, it's going to get a rankings boost. But if it doesn't, it's going to drop off no matter how many other things you have going for it, no matter how perfectly optimized it is. So if you create a format that's going to be a great fit for that keyword, then you're in good shape. And the best way to do that, honestly, is just to Google the keyword and look what's ranking. And it's not always going to be the same format. Like, you're not going to get 10 list posts or 10 case studies, but you get an idea of what works and what doesn't. And that's probably the format you should go with. And then the other factor is, what can you hit out of the park, right? Like, if you don't have a case study, you don't have to write a case study. And if you've never made it, if you're not paleo dessert expert, but you've curated recipes from other places, maybe you do a list post, right? Whatever you could create the best thing, that's the way to do it. I have different formats that I use. Like, I have a thing called the expanded list post. I have ultimate guides. So basically, once I have the keyword, I figure out the format and the rest follows.
So there are some, like, when you type it in, like you said, the best way, Google it, see what's ranking. There are sometimes, shockingly, Brian, which you are, I'm sure, well aware, you search, say, whatever, quick paleo desserts, and the top 10 listings are all 13 quick paleo desserts, 42 quick, they're all almost identical, the titles, except for the number has changed. In this sort of instance, you still want to nail this keyword. You still think you can rank and you can write something better. Would you recommend that it should be a list post, but it should be titled differently to actually stand out? Or should you just go right into the same and do something and take another strategy to it?
So there's no right answer, because it depends on how it is. So,
but what would you do? I mean, like,
I like to actually just do the kind of different in a lot of cases, unless it really doesn't make sense. Like, I'll give you a good example, John. So a keyword that I'm aiming for is SEO tips. So SEO tips. And those results, top 10, are list posts. You know what I mean? Like, there's doesn't make sense for it to be anything else. So part of me, the contrarian in me, the entrepreneur in me, sees the top 10 as list posts. Like, I want to write something totally different, like a case study. But it doesn't really make sense. So I have to swallow my pride and be like, you know what? I just need to write a different list post. So there's two different ways to go about it if you're going to use the same format. One is to go bigger and badder. Just create, if they're doing 12 recipes, do 100. If they're doing 100, do 200. Just go insane and list out as many paleo dessert recipes as you can get your hands on, as you can make up. Just make something huge. That actually is deceptively effective. Like, if you create something that's massive, it sounds like that's so dumb. Like, who wants 200 recipes? But there's a certain wow factor to it that just works. And I built a large part of my blog in the early days just creating these like ridiculously long lists and big guides. And just by the sake that they're bigger and better help them stand out, get attention, and rank in Google. But you can also be a little different. So to give you a good example, for the SEO tips keyword, all the other results, they're mostly like 200 tips or 75 tips or 100 tips. They're like massive lists, but they don't really go into a lot of depth on each one, right? Because you can't. If you're going to have 100 tips, you can't really go into a lot of information on each one. So I have one, a post that's 17 tips, but they're more detailed than the others that are out there. And that seems to be working. I just published this last week, so it's hard to say for sure. But early on, it looks like a winner with that approach. So you can still stand out without going bigger and better. But if you're not sure what to do or how to make it, or you know, how to make it different, just go bigger and better.
And you can always, and it's actually recommended by you and others, to update your posts later.
Exactly. So if,
like, this isn't set and forget, that's it, you never do it again.
No, and that's something I actually learned recently. So, you know, I had some posts that bombed back in the day, a couple of years ago, and I was just like, oh, well, that sucks. And I felt bad, disappointed that they didn't do well. And I didn't realize that you could just go back and improve them. And then all of a sudden, magically, they would start ranking. So, you know, I call it the content relaunch. It's basically when you go back to an old post, you improve it and update it and relaunch it like a new post. And magically, it gets tons more traffic and links and all that stuff. It's like insanely powerful. So yeah, you don't have to have a lot of put this pressure on yourself. Like, this needs to do really well, especially if you're just starting out. No one's going to read it anyway. When you're first starting out, you're going to have like 5 readers. But those 5 readers, when they see something awesome, will share it. Then you have 10 readers and you're on your way. If you put out something mediocre, another 13 paleo recipes, well, you're just going to blend in with everybody else. Like, that's just a total waste of time. So either go bigger and better or somehow different. The problem with different is that different is tough because it's hard to define. Bigger and better is clear, right? If someone has 50 recipes, you can put out 100. It's a lot more straightforward. And when I was starting out, I was sort of feeling my way out through things and getting my feet wet. When in doubt, I just went bigger and better.
So I've been in doubt with SEO, Brian, and I've taken your advice and gone bigger and better. And so our last article, it was all number posts and all lists. The highest one, I think, was 100 or 99. And so I went to 176, and it's by far the most popular post we've ever done. And as of today, I think we're ranking number 4, which is staggering to me because we're beating people that I feel like I shouldn't be beating, but I just followed you. Just go bigger and better than anybody else.
So. Yeah, it's like dumb. It's honestly like stupid. It sounds like stupid advice, right? Like someone like, just go bigger and better. Like, go better than the rest. Like, it doesn't sound very sophisticated, but like you said, John, it just works. I could explain it 10 ways a Tuesday and try to tell you how it works. Like, there's research from Dr. Jonah Berger that found that when content elicits a feeling of awe from someone, when they have that feeling of awe, they're more likely to share that content online. So there's data to show that there's reasons behind it, but I'm not going to pretend I totally understand it, but I've seen it pretty consistently that if you go bigger and badder than what's out there, it's definitely not going to do horribly, and it's probably going to do well.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. So it can't just be bigger. Like, it can be bigger and badder, but there's a lot of other things that go into the creation of it that make it work or not work. So I guess I'll leave it to you to tell us what step we're at.
I'd say we're on step 3. Okay. So I think we had the keyword was 1 or 1A or 1B. But at the end, it's all 1. You get the keyword. 2 is the format. And then 3 is, I suppose, writing the thing.
Okay.
Does that sound right?
So we've decided paleo desserts. So you've looked it up and you've decided the format that you want to choose. What now is the process you go through?
So the next step is to outline. So this is where... And this is really helpful for those bigger, badder posts, because you're going to quickly realize that it's easy to say I'm going to write out 200 recipes. It's a lot harder to do. As someone who's written a lot of these posts, like, I have these grandiose ideas, like, I'm going to do this like 500 ways to blah, blah, blah. And then I get down to, I'm like, oh, what did I sign up for? Like, I want to quit. So outlining really helps with that. And that's something that Neil Patel, who is a friend of mine, taught me. The outlining is really important. I worked with him on a big guide when I first started the blog, and he was like, send me an outline in a week or something like that. I remember thinking, like, an outline. I haven't written an outline since high school. You know, when they made you write an outline because you had to show them. You know, remember that? You'd have, like, the number, Roman numeral one, all that stuff underneath it. Right? Terrible. And I was pretty sure I'd never written an outline since then, so because no one made me. But he was right. There was a wisdom to that. I wrote the outline, and then I was reluctant to do it. But I was like, you know, he's Neil Patel. We're working together. I'm not going to be like, no, I'm not going to write an outline. So I wrote the outline, and just as an exercise to say, look, I did the outline. But when it actually got down to writing, it was insane. It was really helpful. And since then, I've been a huge fan of writing outlines. So now when I write anything, I outline it. With a list post, like 200 desserts, I mean, it's pretty straightforward what your outline's going to look like. A short intro, 200 items, and then the conclusion. And the rub is that you have to fill in all that stuff. For other type of posts, like a case study or a how-to post with steps, there's more creativity in the outline. The outline is more important. With a giant list post, the outline's pretty simple. The hard part is actually doing it. But in any event, having the outline really helps, because if you're trying to write out 200 recipes and you go, okay, recipe one, this blah 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 recipe, da 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 da. Okay, recipe two, and then you need to find recipe two. It's so inefficient. You're better off just grabbing the 200 that you're going to write about, put some notes for each one, and then fill it in as you go on.
Right. So like you say, the outline, if you're doing a case study, all those things, it is more creativity. You can do sort of subtopics and subtopics of those if you need to. You could think back to, I guess, high school or school in that sense. But in there, you said there's also going to be your intro. I need to talk to you about intros, because you do intros differently than anybody I've seen. And you do it for a reason that, to me, had this like profound shift in the way I thought about content creation. Can you talk to us about your intros?
Sure. So when I first started writing, intros were really intimidating for me. I was really nervous about writing intros because I didn't know what to say. So I'd usually just copy other people's intros. I'd look at their intros and be like, oh, that's a good idea. So like they said, this is really important in 2016, back in the day. And I'd say, okay, this, now I just changed the topic from email marketing to link building. You know, link building is really important in 2016. And because that blank page was so intimidating for your intro, I wanted to be clever. I wanted to catch someone's eye. I wanted to make them intrigued. There's a lot of pressure with the intro, especially when you put a lot of effort into something, because your intro, most people understand, is going to make or break your post in a lot of ways. So if you fumble in your intro, you're in trouble. Knowing that, my intros, I spent a lot of time in them, and they never really came out that great. They were kind of like awkward. They didn't get to the point. Like I was trying to make a point in the intro, and they just weren't very good, to be honest. And then one day I realized, like, I don't even basically need an intro. That was my idea that I started with. Like, what if I just didn't have an intro? So if you had a list post, what if it started with the first thing, the first item on the list? I tried that. I didn't publish it, but I looked at it. It looked weird, and it sounded weird, and not in a good way. It seemed awkward. So I was like, you know, what if I just wrote an intro that just kind of reiterated what was coming up? So instead of an intro, I looked at it more of a preview. So instead of an intro like, the paleo diet is increasing in popularity, but how do you eat desserts that are healthy and paleo friendly? I've tried 100 different recipes and they never really taste like the, you know, you could go on and on like that. Or you could just say, this is a list of 200 paleo diet desserts, including ingredients, pictures, steps. Let's dive right in. That can be your intro right there. I just wrote it. That's a way better intro than the original, even though it took me 5 seconds off the top of my head. And man, does it take the pressure off. All you have to basically do is tell people what's coming up in your post. Not only is it effective, it's really easy. And it's what people want in an intro. They don't want a long introduction of the topic. They know that. That's why they're reading it. You know, they don't need to know about the paleo diet. They follow it already. All they need to know is what's on this page. Is this a good fit for me? And if your intro nails that, you're 10 miles ahead of everyone else.
So this is the one that really, really was shocking to me, though. And recipes is the perfect example, Brian, because I think anybody listening who has searched for a recipe has also complained about the fact that I don't need to hear your whole backstory for like 3 pages I just want the recipe. And to me, that was profound. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I would assume it seems like the reason you do this is because if I'm searching for how to get backlinks, you don't need to sell me on the idea that I need backlinks. You don't need to tell me all the reasons backlinks are the most amazing thing, because that's not what I'm obviously know that. That's why I want to know how to get them.
Exactly, John. There's one caveat to that I will point out. You can also write an intro that relates to what that person's going through. So instead of just a straightforward, this post is going to show you how to get backlinks, you can say something like, let's face it, getting backlinks is really hard, especially if you're just starting or don't have any connections. That kind of intro is a little bit, meanders a bit off the straightforward path, but it's still, to your point, John, it speaks to that person that's searching for that keyword. They're searching for that keyword probably because they've tried to get backlinks before, or they're just getting, you know, and then when they read something like that, they're going to say, wow, I can really relate to this. It's going to hook them on an emotional level and they're going to keep reading. So I would say you don't need to make every intro like, this is exactly what you're going to see. I've been doing that more and more because I just can't be bothered to think of, you know, write these super convoluted intros. But the other option is, especially if you don't like that for some reason, you can write something short that relates to what that person's going through. So when they read it, they're going to say, man, this person gets it. For example, John, I'm a big cook myself. I also have gone through that. I've been scrolling with my phone for like an hour to get to the actual recipe. It's about how they made it for their kids and it didn't turn out right the first time. And then they replaced this ingredient with that. And I'm like, just get to the recipe. You could write in your recipe something like, you've all looked for a recipe and, you know, scrolled through 1,000 lines of text. This is not one of those. I'm just going to get right into the recipe. You know, if you can relate to that person, it really helps have that, establish that emotional connection, which is good for your site in general and building a readership, but it's also good for SEO because that person reads it and like, oh, finally, I found the person that gets me. And they're going to be more likely to read your stuff and not go back and read anyone else's. They're going to stay in your site.
Absolutely. And because we don't need stories, we don't need all those things at the beginning, like I think most of us are taught, well, we're taught in school and then most of the stuff we read online has that. And just for you listening out there, because the way Brian explains his introductions, they are so much more simple than you're thinking. So I just want to read one really quickly for you, Brian. So your definitive guide to backlinks. So just picture yourself out there listening and you type in backlinks, how to get backlinks. And then you land on this article that says, this is the most comprehensive guide to backlinks on the planet. The best part? I'm going to show you techniques for getting backlinks that are working right now in 2018. In short, you want higher Google rankings? You'll love this guide. Let's get started. Man, when you land on that, like you're not going anywhere else. You're reading this article. That's, to me, it's fascinating that you seem to be one of the only people online that absolutely do this. And I think other people could kill it in their markets if they adopted this style of writing.
Me too. I actually am reluctant to talk about it now because I think I realized that we shouldn't let the cat in the bag on this because, yeah, every time I read an article in the SEO space or the marketing space, it's like the ROI of email marketing is da 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 da. You know, I'm just like, man, this is great because no one else has picked up on the short intro, the importance of that. So it's astute that you have because I've been in a lot of interviews. You're the first person that's ever asked me about intros. And to me, they're super important and underrated.
They are absolutely crucial. And I've actually been teaching, like telling people to start writing their articles. I have some clients and I've been like, I don't do SEO, but it's just like, okay, you have to write your articles like this. I don't care. Don't flourish it. Don't do anything. Just write it like this. And I send them a couple of your posts and they're like, wow, that's amazing. So it is the thing. So we found the keyword. We've chosen a format. We've outlined the article according to Neil Patel's guidelines for you. Now, what do we do?
So then it's just a matter of writing. This is hard because it's putting one word after the other. There's no like how to guide to write. That's where the outline actually comes into play because you can teach an outline, but you can't really teach writing. Like you can show someone a very detailed outline and just let them fill in the blanks. But the actual filling in the blanks part, that's like 90% art versus science. That said, there are some tips that I can give you while you write that can make the process a lot easier and less stressful. So one is to use lots of examples and little stories. So the reason this is powerful is because A, humans love examples. It helps people learn. People love stories. It's entertaining as long as they're not boring and long like an old person story. But if you have but it separates you from most other content online because most people are doing WordPress post open in one tab, Google open the other tab, and regurgitating what they read. Right. And they don't usually use examples because they just have to copy the examples from someone else. And it's kind of obvious at that point. So if you can say, I did this, you have no idea how much that can separate you from everybody else. It's kind of like the intro. It seems so silly to spend time on talking about intros and how to simplify them, but it's so important. It's the same thing. Anytime you can say, I did this, it helps you separate yourself so much from the other content out there that's just regurgitating the same old stuff. So as you're writing, just focus on doing the best, just on stuff that you've done, kind of telling what you've done. So a good example of this on a different format is Tim Ferriss, author of The 4-Hour Workweek, talked about how he struggled when he was writing the book at first because of writing, right? He didn't like writing. He didn't see himself as a very good writer. And he really struggled with that process. And he asked someone for advice and they told him, just tell stories. Just tell stories. And if we look back to our favorite blog posts, books, videos, whatever, they tend to be stories. They don't have to be like a story, like one time this happened, but at least there's some anecdotal stuff in there that makes it a lot more interesting and compelling. So that would be my number one piece of advice.
Have you always written like this?
Yes, I was a freelance writer before I started Backlinko. So I was a copywriter. I wrote like sales letters and ebooks and stuff. So I refined writing like the process and the style that way and just applied it when I started the blog. But I mean, I'm from academia. Like I went to college, I got my master's. So my writing style at first was this boring, long, complicated, trying to sound smart style. And it took me a long time to get away from that and to write. Basically write like you talk, which is the end goal of writing well.
There we go. Yes. You absolutely write like you talk. You don't try and sound smart, but it's obvious that you know what the hell you're talking about because everything is just so matter of fact.
Yeah. And I think that's where the examples come in, because if you write trying to impress people with big words, it doesn't really work, especially online. But if you write like a caveman, but you can show people you did it, that's better content, even though the writing might not be as good in the traditional sense.
So we've now outlined it and just written out the words. What would you say is step number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6?
Okay, so the next step is to optimize it for SEO.
So this would be on-page SEO if people were looking for it?
This would be on-page SEO, yep. So this is not as complicated as it was because Google's so much smarter. Like back in the day, you'd have to spoon feed Google information about your site. You'd have to be like, oh, here, this is a keyword. This page is about this. This page is about that. They're so much more smart and sophisticated now, thanks to updates like RankBrain and Hummingbird. You almost have to look at it like it's a person reading your site because they use AI that's not that far from that. Now, when you write the post, all you really need to do is let Google know, my page is about this keyword. Once you do that, they can basically take care of the rest. So if you optimize it with a little bit, it goes a long way, right? So for example, all you need to do when you finish writing is make sure your keyword is in your title. So that's the title tag of your page, not necessarily the title of your WordPress post, although I just use the same for both. Next, you want to include your keyword. Depending on the length, there's no magic number. I like to do 3 or 4 times. Sometimes if you write an article naturally without even thinking of keywords, you'll write it 25 times. Honestly, it doesn't matter. Don't sweat it too much, but it's more of a threshold thing. Like if you don't have your keyword anywhere on your page, Google is going to have a harder time figuring it out. But once you have it 5 times, especially if it's also in your title, they're going to figure it out. But if you write naturally, like if you wrote about paleo desserts and naturally you said it 30 times in 3,000 words, just keep it. It's fine. Next, you want to make sure your URL includes your keyword. So a lot of times by default, depending if you use WordPress or something else, Shopify or whatever, URL sometimes has a lot of junk in it. And that actually, first of all, Google uses your URL as a way to figure out what your page is about. So if it's like paleo desserts, or if it's like slash paleo slash recipes slash blog slash rest, you know, they're going to be like, what the hell is this page about? So you just want to do yoursite.com/keyword. That's it. Simple. It works really well. It's also good for SEO because one of the big Google ranking factors now is click-through rate. So when someone searches for a keyword, how many people click on your result? If a lot of people click on your result, that's a great sign to Google that you have a great result for that search term. Also, it's just good for SEO in general because more people click on your stuff, you get more traffic. And if your URL is really long, it doesn't look as compelling to click on as if it's really short. So if I was looking for paleo desserts and I saw a site that was like site.com/paleo desserts, I'd be more likely to click on that than like site.com/8/7/2018/blog/category/all this crap. I'm not going to click on it because I'm like, what is that? It doesn't make a huge difference. It's not like you're going to double your clicks or anything, but you will get more clicks with a shorter URL. And it's actually Google is one of the few pieces of SEO advice they give is to use short URLs and include your target keyword. Honestly, that is basically all you need to do to get started with on-page SEO. There's a million other things you can do, but as long as you do that, you're pretty much good to go.
So I think the experience most of us have, myself and listening, with on-page SEO, even maybe not even knowing that it was called that, Brian, is Yoast. Yoast, the plugin for WordPress, with all those little green lights. Is this something that we should be following and just working tirelessly to make sure that every single light goes from red to yellow to green?
Absolutely not. So Yoast is a great plugin. I use it as well. All you need to do to use Yoast is in your post in WordPress or page, scroll to the bottom where it says put your title and description in. Write those in there and click save or publish. Then don't touch anything else. Don't worry about lights. Don't worry about any of that stuff. They haven't updated that stuff in like years, right? It's been the same lights since like 2010. Don't sweat it. Just use it to put your title tag and title and meta description of the post. That's all you need Yoast for, honestly. You can also use it to put like social images. So when people share on Facebook, an image shows up. But when it comes to SEO stuff, I haven't looked at that stuff in years and I wouldn't recommend it.
Okay, cool. And I use Yoast too. And I think it's really valuable for what you just said. I just know that some people do get caught up in that. So I appreciate that. One thing they also mentioned though, Brian, is, and you mentioned the clean URL, they mention not using stop words, which I think is like and the, and words that they see as, I guess, superfluous to what you're trying to do. Is it recommended that you remove those and just get a closer, cleaner URL?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're ever in doubt about what to do, just think like, this is like the dumbest piece of advice ever on a podcast, but do what makes sense. I almost can't even say it without laughing. But with SEO, people go crazy.
They do.
It's actually have to tell them, like, I don't know why. Something about SEO, people go crazy. And I remember it's so funny. I'm laughing, but when I first got into SEO, I was the exact same way. When I launched my first site, what made sense was totally irrelevant. I would build these like spammy backlinks. And my site would have spun content on it, which is like basically auto-generated content. And I was just like, this will work. You know, I'll rank in Google. And not once did it cross my mind that I should do what just made sense, like from a common sense perspective. And I remember I was talking to a friend of mine, another entrepreneur who's very successful a couple of years ago. When I was doing this stuff, this was like 2011, 2012, he was doing the same stuff. And that's when he launched his website that ended up being popular, because he told me, I saw the writing on the wall that this era of doing this shady stuff was ending. And that blew my mind. It didn't even cross my mind that this would ever not work. Like doing this shady stuff and doing this stuff that didn't make any sense, keyword stuffing, using shady backlinks, buying backlinks, putting up keyword exact match domain names like paleodietdesserts.com. It didn't even cross my mind that one day this would stop working. So something about SEO, it just gets in your head and you're thinking like, why don't we, you know, putting stop words or don't put stop words. To answer your question, this is a long answer. I think you should take them out as long as the URL still reads well. But in general, you want to aim to really short URLs. And if you make your URL your keyword, you don't usually have to worry about stop words because not too many keywords have stop words. So for example, it doesn't have to be exactly a keyword, but it could be keyword plus another word. So for example, the backlinks guide that you referenced earlier, my keyword is backlinks, but it's not just backlinko.com/backlinks, it's backlinks-guide. Is that good for SEO? Probably not, because no one's searching for backlinks guide, but it's just good because it makes sense.
You probably rank fairly well for that article.
It does okay. Yeah. But I think the URL, first of all, it's a super small percentage of impact that has. But in SEO, every bit counts. So there's nothing wrong with optimizing your URL. But I wouldn't like spend a ton of time worrying about superfluous words as long as at the end of the day, it's a short URL.
If I was brave enough, Brian, I would title this episode SEO by Brian Dean, Do What Makes Sense.
Oh my God,
but I won't.
I don't want, because the problem is, John, I actually wouldn't usually care, but the SEO space is so full of that theoretical nonsense. You know what I mean? Like, write content for users, not search engines. And a big one a couple years ago was don't build links, build relationships.
Yes.
And like, I despise that stuff. So for me saying like, please don't do that, I'll kill you, first of all. But do it make sense? It's the worst advice, like I said, ever in a podcast. I did have a disclaimer on that before I said it.
You did.
But for some reason in SEO, and I'm victim to this as anyone else, it needs to be said. At the end of the day, just be, if you're not sure what to do, just kind of forget SEO and just do what makes sense for your users and for your site.
Yeah. And I don't think that's terrible advice, because as you mentioned in that answer, Brian, people with like their black hat and their shady tactics, it blows my mind when people are still talking about that. And all I can think is, you honestly think you're smarter than like 100,000 like Google engineers? Like it's the most like, it's the boldest thing anyone could ever think about themselves. But I guess people still do it.
Yeah, not many though. It's kind of dying.
That's dying true. That's true. So a significant part of your articles that I've also noticed, and I think everybody has noticed, is your use of images. So can you tell us, I'm assuming this would come in, you write, and then you would look at your on page, and part of on page, I'm assuming, is your image usage.
No, I put images more in the writing stage.
So as you're going through, you're like, this makes sense here, this makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. I usually have an image in mind, like not just it's like an image, it's a particular image. Like a screenshot, or I mean, in my case, my blog's about SEO, so there's a lot of screenshots, but it could be a picture of you doing an exercise or an ingredient, depending on what you write about. But as you write, yeah, you can almost never put enough images. The goal of a lot of my case studies when I write a case study is that in theory, someone could just look at the images and not even read it and kind of understand what happened, which in my space is kind of hard because we're looking at like charts and graphs and things like that. But still, you could tell, you know, in the early part of the post, my ranking, maybe I'm ranking 12, or and my traffic is going down. And then you see some things that happened in between. And at the end, you see the rankings go up and the traffic go up. And you don't really need to read it to understand what happened. It can be the same with any niche, right? If you got in shape, you could show before pictures, kind of before pictures of what you used to eat, how you used to live, what you look like, and then how you turn things around. You started going to the gym, you started eating healthier, whatever, and then the after stuff. Images are really helpful. Humans are visual creatures. Even the point of basis of words is to put pictures in people's heads, but pictures do it a lot better. So I do like to use a ton of images, but that's more of the writing phase because it doesn't directly help SEO.
Right, and they're not images of beautiful sunsets and beaches. They're literally 100% screenshots or images that, like you said, you could just glance at the images. So if you were writing this paleo desserts article, it could literally be the step-by-step process of creating this dessert in images as you're also typing it out.
Yeah, and that helps a lot. I mean, I cook a lot, so that's basically the content that I read a lot on my phone, especially as I'm cooking. And the pictures help a lot because one thing to say like a pound of chopped carrots, but how thin should they be cut, and a lot of nuances. And with the picture and the words, it helps a lot. And that applies to pretty much every piece of content out there.
And do the images themselves need to be SEO optimized?
Yeah. So you want to write the file name doesn't matter that much. I just like to use a descriptive file. This kind of falls into the do it makes sense folder, which I'm kicking myself for saying that again. But if you make your file name like just a description of what it is. So, you know, if it's sliced carrots, slicedcarrots.png will work. And then if you upload it to your site, I just usually put like sliced carrots as the alt text. That's good for SEO because it helps Google understand your images. They can kind of see images, but not really. So it helps them understand your content because especially like my posts, a big chunk, if you look at like percentage space that the images take up versus text, it's a lot. So you want to help Google understand what your images are about. So you don't want to use like 11085.png and then upload it and have an empty alt text. It's also good for accessibility. So people that are visually impaired, it helps them basically read your content, get it read to them so they can understand it better. So a lot of people have messaged me and left comments on my blog saying they appreciate that I write alt text for everything and describe everything well so that it makes it easier for them to see, so to speak, what they can't see with their eyes. So it's also just a good thing to do in general.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And it, again, doesn't have to be overthought. It doesn't have to be keyword stuffed. It just has to literally be what it is. And the image should be, I guess, congruent enough to the article to put the reader forward, but also put the search engines forward. So are we ready to publish the article at this point? Are you ready to publish this article?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Okay. So we published the article. Do we just hit publish on WordPress and then do we close our laptop and go for a coffee?
Yeah. Yeah. You deserve it. You worked hard. Oh, no. You want me to say that you should promote it?
There's probably a few, like, what's the very next thing you guys do after hitting publish?
So after hitting publish, the goal is to just get eyeballs on it. So I call the first step, the first phase after publishing, the eyeball phase. And this is just like it sounds. You're not trying to get links. You're not trying to get influencers to see it. The goal is just to get eyeballs on it. And the reason for that is A, from my own testing, there is some sort of like buzz meter by Google that they can figure out people are visiting your page, interacting with it, sharing it. There's something to it. I've seen it a million times. You get a boost. It may be temporary. It depends on how well your content fits, but you'll notice a lot of times a piece of content that first comes out, it's new, so it gets a little bump from being fresh, but also all those buzz signals, for lack of a better term, help it get a temporary ranking. And a lot of times, if it's a good fit, it'll drop down, but it won't drop down to oblivion. It'll drop from, let's say, 7 to 12 or 15, as opposed to if you just publish it, it might go to 7 just based on freshness, or 8, and then just drop to like 40. So definitely want to get a lot of eyeballs on it. How we do that is the number one thing is an email list. So if you have an email list, if you don't, like, you should almost stop listening to this podcast and start doing that. It's so important. But another piece of great advice, right, John? Just stop listening to the podcast.
Stop listening right now. Never come back.
Never. Yeah. Just delete it from your phone. But seriously, if you have a list, it's the ultimate content promotion tool because the engagement's so good, interaction's so great. And you can get it out to way more people than you could typically on social media. Depends. If you're like a huge, you know, if you have a million Twitter followers, it's a different story. But for most people, the email list is the ultimate way to get your content in front of people. And even if you have like, I started from scratch. I had no subscribers, no visitors. So when I started and I built my email list to, let's say, 50 people, which I think when I published my first, when I sent out my first newsletter, so I published stuff, built the email list from doing that. I sent it to probably 50 people, but that helped a lot because 3 people commented, which was huge. 4 people shared it, which is massive. And then you're on your way versus tweeting. If you don't have any followers or Facebook fans, it's really hard to get the word out. The newsletter is the ultimate way to get in front of people. And one piece of advice I can give around that is not to send out a traditional newsletter. That's like, here are 5 things to click on. We published this. We did that, blah, blah, blah. Just announce a post. If you want to see a good example, you can subscribe to mine. If you want to see it in different verticals, if you go to SaaS, in the SaaS world, CoSchedule does that. So if you sign up for the CoSchedule newsletter, they send out emails. It's a guy, Nathan, from CoSchedule, their head of growth, I think. And it just looks like an email. Like, hey, just want to let you know we published this post. Here you go. Check it out. And the click-through rate will be 10 times better than you would with this fancy-looking newsletter with 10 different links that no one's going to click on. So that's usually the number one focus is the newsletter. And then Facebook, promoted posts, Twitter, and a new one that has been killing it is LinkedIn. If you're in B2B or even in anything close like resembling B2B, LinkedIn is awesome for promoting content. The reach is just way better than other platforms, especially Facebook. And the engagement is way higher. Something about it, maybe because it's kind of new in the sense that it's like had a resurgence lately. But for example, when I tweet something out, I probably get like 200 clicks. Like last week I published a post, I probably got 200 clicks or 150 on the tweet. And I got 1600 on visits from LinkedIn. Like it's a total different world. So if you're in the B2B space or even anything close, I recommend sharing your stuff on LinkedIn.
Are you promoting your stuff on LinkedIn, like paid?
No, just posting it. So about a year ago, I started doing more on LinkedIn because I saw some stat that like LinkedIn has almost as many users as Facebook, but 87% of people have never posted anything. They just kind of have a profile with their, you know, I worked here, or my skills or blah, blah, blah. But most people don't post anything. And it's totally different on Facebook or Twitter, right? Everyone's posting all the time. So it's so much more competitive on those platforms. So when I put out a Facebook post, I'm lucky if anyone sees it unless I promote it. On LinkedIn, it's like magic. You put it out there. If the content's good, even if it just like, for example, the last SEO tips post that I published last week, I just basically copy and pasted the newsletter email into LinkedIn as a LinkedIn post. It's like, hey, today I'm going to show you 17 tips for blah, blah, blah. Here's a link. And it got 50,000 views in LinkedIn and 1,600 people clicked through. And it was no magic to it. And it was just because it was really good content. So when people click through and they read it, opens in another tab. When they go back to it, they comment on it and like it and stuff. And that helps it show in their network. It's how Facebook used to work back in the day. Like it's basically how Facebook used to work. You know, if you comment on something on Facebook, it used to show that post to your friends that you commented on something. It doesn't really work like that anymore. LinkedIn is still like that. Like if John, you comment on one of my things, a lot of your connections are going to see that. And then you can go viral, like in that old traditional way. So yeah, LinkedIn is a big one.
So you just posted the email which is really short. Yeah. It's like one of your intros basically, which tells them what they're going to get if they go read this.
Exactly. I just literally copied and pasted it from the email. It took out like, hey, you know, name at the beginning.
Right.
Do what makes sense. Right? That,
do what makes sense.
I'm going to get a tattoo on
my
arm.
There we go.
But yeah, LinkedIn has been pretty powerful. Done different stuff like posts without any links. And I've seen that even posts with links can do well, like the last one. I mean, the one before didn't do as well. This is like a good one of the better ones. Like last one probably got like 600 visits from LinkedIn or something. But still 3 times more than Twitter. And I have way more followers on Twitter. And you think Twitter is the place to share content, right? And that's probably why it doesn't work, because everyone's doing that. On LinkedIn, like I said, like I don't know what the stat is exactly, but 80-something percent of people have never posted anything. But they're on there. So it's so much less crowded and noisy than other platforms right now.
Wow. And when we started this episode before you were on here, Brian, the sponsor of this episode was actually LinkedIn. So this works out well. So I guess if you don't have the huge following on there, you could take them up on that free $100 ads offer at linkedin.com/hack. You might as well say
nice.
We're here. We're here. Okay. So eyeball phase email list. I don't actually think you even send anything else out to your email list besides your announcements of posts and videos, which is unique and also super, super powerful. But what about announcing this, or how do you let Google know that you have a new post?
So in most cases, Google will kind of find it. So when you publish something, if your site has any links pointing to it, like if it's already indexed in Google, which most sites are, then they'll find it in a couple of hours. They have a way of sniffing out new stuff. I actually don't know how. There used to be like this WordPress ping thing that would kind of like ping Google when something new came out. I don't know if that actually exists anymore. Maybe they just find out anyway, but they figure it out. But if you want to be on the safe side, you can use a feature in the Google Search Console called Fetch and Render. And how that works is you go to your Google Search Console account and you put in the URL of the new post and basically tell them to come index it. And they'll do it within like 10 minutes usually. So I've been doing that lately because I had an incident like 2 months ago where something I published didn't get indexed quickly and scraper sites were getting indexed for some reason. So when I submitted it to Google, it eventually got indexed and ranked above the scraper sites and stuff. But now I've made that a practice to do every time I publish something new. So it doesn't hurt. Usually, like I said, usually it's not a problem. Like for the last 5 years, I've never had an issue. I've barely ever used that feature. But about 6 months ago, I started using it.
Yeah. To me, I would recommend using it because it is super easy to do. I learned that from one of your posts, I think, about Google Search Console, which if you were out there, and I think lots of people don't even have Search Console set up yet for their site. It's sort of an extension or a sister to Google Analytics. But again, I'll link to an article on Backlinko that will set you completely straight on all of that. So we published the article. The eyeball phase is complete. Now, what do we do? Do we start writing another article?
I mean, you can, but for most sites, if you're just starting out and getting traction, that's the last thing you want to do because there are probably opportunities out there for other more influential people to share content or to link to it. So a mistake I made in the early days with one of my first sites was exactly that. Like I would publish, kind of share it as many places as I could and move on to the next article. And when I did that, I realized that it would get a bump. My traffic would go up for a while and then it would slowly go down and then it'd go up and then it'd go down every time I published something. I never really hit like a baseline of traffic that where if I didn't publish anything, my traffic didn't drop through the floor. And a big part of that is that once I learned that, I started focusing on link building. And that was ultimately made all the difference because links are still Google's number one ranking factor by far. So we've talked about on-page stuff, we talked about keywords and click-through rate and creating the best stuff, and all that stuff matters. But at the end of the day, if your site doesn't have links pointing to it, you're not going to rank. And there's no better way to get links than publishing something great. So when you publish something truly amazing, you've already done a lot of the hard work. Like the link building step is not as hard. If you try to promote something crappy, like I get outreach emails all the time, like you link to this, I create something better, but it's actually not even good. It's trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. Like it's not going to work. But if you have something amazing, all you really need to do is kind of get it in front of people that have the power to link to it, and they're not dumb. They'll do the rest. There's a ton of nuances on that. Link building is like a field, basically. So it's hard to say cover it in 2 minutes. But the basic gist is to find pages online where your link makes sense and would add value, and then get your content in front of the person that runs that page. So for example, most niches have something called, or you say niches in Canada, right?
Yeah, we do. Sorry.
You do. Say a lot of things up there. So you have an international audience, I imagine. They know what I just said. So when you, in any niche, you have resource pages, and those are like links to different resources. So if you're looking for information on iPhone app development, there's probably a post that's just resources on iPhone app development. Like they just link out to the best stuff. They curate helpful resources about that topic. And there's value in doing that. Like there's help. That's a helpful thing to do. It's a great piece of content in its own right. But important for link building, if you have a resource that you made that would fit on that page and you email that person politely and just kind of suggest that they might want to perhaps add it, you have a good chance of getting a link. That said, good chance, let me define that, because link building outreach, the conversion rate is really low. So most agencies who are experts, like they do this all day long, they're like 7 to 8% conversion rate. So for every 100 people that email, 7 to 8 will actually link. That's the rub when it comes to link building. You're not going to like email 100 people and get 90 links. It's never happened in the history of link building. And no matter how great your content is, just some people are busy, some people don't care. Maybe it's not a good fit. They had a bad day. Like it kind of takes this constellation of good things to happen for it to actually work out. So just as you do link building, keep in mind that the conversion rate is typically low. 7-8% is like legendary. 2-5% is normal. So don't get discouraged. Just keep at it. It's kind of a numbers game.
I think you might have said this once or twice on the show. I didn't notice it until right now. And to me, this is the the trick or what you should keep in mind when you're creating content, written, audio, video, whatever it happens to be, but to be as useful as your content is, Brian, the way you started this answer was you said the answer and then you said, for example, which I love. Like, your videos are full of it and so are your posts. And to me, that's what makes them so valuable. Because you don't just state something like, well, I get all this traffic, here's how it works. It's like, for example, here and here and here. Oh, and for example, here and here. And it's like, to me, if everybody could just take that and when you've stated something, now say, for example, and show an example of how you've done it.
Yeah, that's great advice, John. And it's funny, I learned that I always use examples because I kind of knew they worked. But I remember I took an online course by a guy named Derek Halpern, who's a very smart entrepreneur.
Yes.
And I remember I was taking one of his courses and I would feel this kind of level of stress rising. Like, I watch a video and it'd be like, okay, step one is to do this. And this is important because X, and I could feel like my stress, like, oh, how do I do this? Or how's it going to work? How does it apply to me? And then he would say, for example, and be like, ah, okay. And then it would go to step two. And then every time he said, for example, I relaxed basically, because it just, we need examples. Like, you can't learn without examples. And he's really good at that as well. And that's one of the things I picked up is, like, when you're teaching something, anytime you say, for example, everyone reading or listening or watching instantly feels more relaxed and it's going to help them learn.
Yeah. And it's funny because I've never noticed that about you until you said it here. And instantly I was like, so many of your videos, you get to a part and you're like, for example, and it's like, wow, it's such a profound shift from 99% of people creating content. It's, to me, it's subtle, yet it is profound. And I think everybody should be adopting this. So we've gone through how you would, for Backlinko, choose and publish an article from creation all the way through to promotion. Is there anything, Brian, that you think we've missed or glossed over too much that in a couple of minutes you feel the listener would need to be aware of?
No, the only thing I would point out that we didn't cover at all, and I think it's worth touching on, is design. So it's so hard to talk about design. It's such a visual thing. But in general, in my experience, the better designed something is, the better it performs. So it's kind of like the bigger and better thing. There's something about it that when someone sees it, there's a perceived value that, like, wow, this is really good. And the opposite is true. If someone sees a piece of content that looks bad or a site that's ugly or outdated looking, it really detracts from the content in general. And I think how the content will perform. So every time, I can't say for example, because I can't, now I'm going to think about it every time I do.
Please keep doing it because it, I love it.
For example, on my blog, I realized that I used to write these ultimate guides that were like a blog post, like a normal blog post. Here's how you do this, step one, step two, or topic one, section one, whatever. And I decided to design it and get it designed and look nice. It's the same content basically, but it just was designed to be impressive and beautiful. And it performed night and day. Like, it was 10 times better than the blog post with similar content. So ever since then, I've really focused a lot on design and paid for design. So there's an expression in the design world, like, if you think good design is expensive, wait till you have bad design, which is very true. Like, it's a great investment if you can swing it. The designer that we work with is very expensive. At first, I was like, no way, I'm paying that for that. But it's always been an awesome ROI, great design. So, and if you're just starting out or trying to grow, it's a great way to separate yourself from everyone else. Because most people, when they publish stuff, it's a blog post. And most of your content should be that, like a normal blog post. Nothing wrong with that. But it can help you stand out if once in a while you put out a beautiful infographic or a guide or something visual that's really beautiful. And if your site in general looks good, it's going to increase the perception of you and your brand and how people think of you.
And again, to this backlinks guide, the design of it is phenomenal. And I'll link to it, as I said, because you should read it. And it's super, super useful. But you'll notice the design compared to some of Brian's just regular smaller list posts that are just a regular blog post. And yeah, it's super impressive. And I love that. If you think good design is expensive, try bad design. So I think we've wrapped it all up. I guess one sort of inside thing I would like to know, Brian, you've published this article, you've done the eyeball sort of campaign, and now you've got backlinks. So yours will rise. How often, like, do you neurotically check when a new article goes live where it's ranking?
Oh yeah. I'm insane.
Thank you.
Constantly.
So you use tools, but then you also just like, I need to see.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Tools doesn't scratch the itch.
I love it.
It's one way I have to see it in the flesh.
Awesome. Okay. So I'm going to link to several of Brian's articles in the show notes. As I said, articles that are going to expound on the topics we've discussed, and we didn't get to go into detail during this conversation because SEO is a huge undertaking, and it wouldn't have been worth our time to try and go into too many of them. But besides that, backlinko.com is the site. Brian is at Backlinko on Twitter. He's fairly active there, and I'll also track down his LinkedIn so you can see his next post go, I would call it LinkedIn viral of sorts. But Brian, just thank you so much for stopping by, and just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it is truly awesome to watch.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
All right, Brian, once again, I want to thank you so much. That was a lot of fun. I do appreciate you sharing that with us so openly. So I know you're busy. I know you're probably doing other things while listening to this, and that was a lot to take in. That's why we've created the complimentary blog post that goes with this episode. Hacktheentrepreneur.com/Google. We've written out visually and in text the exact process that Brian walks through so that it's always there for you. Seriously, I want you to test this because, as I said, I've tested this and my results have been staggering in just the last few months. I wanted to see if this worked. I tried it. It absolutely worked. And I want you to do the same. There's nothing even secret about it. It's just the steps that Brian goes through. If you follow these steps and implement what he says and do it in the way he says, it will work. Trust me. So when you're ready, head over to the site, hacktheentrepreneur.com/Google. All right, it's been fun. I hope you dug this episode. It was a little bit different than others, but I know that Brian was bringing the goods, so I wanted to bring it to you. All right, it's been fun. I truly, truly appreciate you stopping by. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.